Big show on Monday, December the 23rd. We heard from our buddy Jim Cameron, of course, our commuter advocate from the Hearst, Connecticut papers, and he talked about the year that was 2019 in transportation, what could be coming up in 2020 on the roads with tolls and all that, and a final year-end wrap-up from Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly as he looks toward a special session coming up in a few weeks. Getting there, that's the goal of a lot of us from day one to day two and three on point A to point B. And the name of the column, Getting There, of course, written by our buddy Jim Cameron, commuter advocate for the Hearst, Connecticut papers, the Connecticut Post, and all of that. Jim, how are you in this holiday season? Everything good?
Oh, I'm filled with Christmas cheer, Paul. I'm as sober as a nun, but I'm filled with Christmas cheer.
I can always rely on a sardonic response from you.
No Grinch in this household, I can tell you.
Jim, your new column is out, and from what I understand, you had a chat with our DOT commissioner, Joe Giletti, who has an interesting background, Jim. He used to run the MTA as well, correct?
Well, he ran Metro North.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Metro North. So he does have extensive experience with our betroubled rail line in Connecticut. But he's a longtime Connecticut resident as well, before that as well. But yeah, I got an exclusive one-on-one interview with him, which I was like bowled over by. And he started off by saying, you know, Jim, you've always been fair. You've hit me hard, but you've always been fair. And so I took that as you know, high praise, especially from somebody who I've not been hesitant to criticize when it's due, but and give him some slack when it's due also. So we covered the gamut. I was supposed to have like a half hour with him on the phone. After an hour, I'm just looking at my notes going, you know, I'm not writing a book here, Commissioner. It's just a column. So next week, next Monday's column is going to be part one of our conversation. And then the following week is going to be part two, and that one with part two is going to include a lot of information about tolls, what he thinks of the No Toll CT campaign, and what's going to happen in the special session coming up that's going to be voting on tolls.
Well, listen, Jim, you and I have been in this business long enough to know that being nice to someone or parroting what they say is not nearly as important as if they deem, whether you're covering transportation or business or politics or sports, if somebody deems you as being fair, as somebody who's not going to twist a quote or try and make something out of something that isn't there, you're going to get the frankness and you're going to get a believability from anybody you're interviewing if you bring that to the table.
That has always been my goal. I mean, I have to ask the tough questions. I did that when I served on the commuter council for 19 years. That's, I think, my job now as a journalist, to ask the tough questions and make sure that they don't tap dance around the answers. I mean, the commissioner, I had to pull him back and say, you know, Commissioner, nice speech there for 10 minutes, but I don't think you quite answered my question, so let me ask it again. And I think that's what being fair is all about. You know, I'm not there to pillory anybody. I'm not there to attack them. I will defend the DOT when I think, and Metro North, when I think that they're being done wrong, especially by some of their harsher critics. You know, I think that's why he was willing to talk to me and not to, you know, open it up to a press conference or something to everybody in the world. So okay. I'm flattered.
All right, we're going to have more with Jim Cameron, our year-ender, with our guy who watches all the commuter news and commuter issues for Connecticut right after this. Traffic and weather together on the 6 is here, part of commuting right at 3:36. It is a Monday on Connecticut Today. And we are here at 203-333-9422, 203-333, all things commuting, does Jim Cameron cover for us. Jim, before we look back at the last year and to some other specific things, I haven't had you on since one of your last columns or reportage regarding this lawsuit against Metro North. You were quoted, at least in the story, regarding this lawsuit that is going to go forward here. And tragically, it involves a gentleman who was killed, folks may remember, coming up on about 7 years ago when he slid in front of an ongoing train. And Jim, you raised some interesting things in that piece about the potential maybe for this to mandate some drastic changes to the way Metro North physically actually runs its service if this goes all the way.
Well, just in the way of background for your listeners who are enjoying their ride up 95 on the Merritt today, I've been watching the traffic. This was a gentleman in Darien who slipped, they say, and fell off the platform at the Nuroton Heights train station and into the path of an ongoing train. I mean, he didn't know the train was coming, I guess, but the engineer, when he came around the curve, I think it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, so it was dark in the winter, saw him trying to get off the track, couldn't stop in time, and unfortunately he was killed. Now, there has been no evidence, there was no video of whether he slipped on the platform. There was some discussion about whether he had jumped. I can't pass judgment on either of those. His family, of course, was bereft. He was a young man, a family man. But they took court action, and it looks like, as you say, it is going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Their argument is that the train that was coming around the corner on the inside track nearest the platform was an express. It wasn't going to stop at the station, and that's why he was killed. And they argue that only the trains that stop at the platform should be on the outside track closest to platform, and expresses should only run on the middle tracks, which are away from the platform. Well, that may not have been, even if that was the case, if it was a local who was going to stop, that doesn't mean that he wouldn't have been hit. The train, even if it's only operating at 10 or 20 miles an hour, could kill somebody if they were on the tracks. If it was operating at 45, 50 miles an hour coming through as an express and not going to stop, they always, hit the horn and warn passengers to stand back. If this lawsuit is successful, it will cripple Metro North, because it is necessary for them, especially in rush hour, to run express trains on any of the four tracks with the signaling and the directions that they have. To say that express trains can only operate on the inside tracks would literally cripple service. So, my heart goes out to the family, but the argument, I think, is a specious one, that he was killed because it was an express train as opposed to a local train. And now the Supreme Court's going to have a look at it.
Yeah, Jim, and there is some also semblance of reason. And, I ride these things 2-3 days a week round trip. And as you do, often people need to. And again, I don't know what exactly was in the mind of this gentleman. It was tragic, whatever happened. But I am appalled and I shake my head at Jim, it's kind of the nonchalance of people that are on these platforms that are, talking and laughing and have headphones on, right up to the edge of these platforms where, maybe I'm just an old man that's worried about everything, but I stand as far away from those rails, especially when there's a train coming through.
Absolutely. And that's why there's a warning strip there, and that's why those trains sound their horns when they're coming into a station like that. They're making good speed, and if you're standing too close to the edge, you're going to be putting your life in peril. So, there's a lesson in this for all of us, whether even if it's a local train that's going to be stopping, wait till the train stops. Don't stand with your nose hanging over the edge of the platform.
Jim, what would you say if you look back at 2019, what are the one or two stories that from your reporting position stand out at you?
Well, obviously, I think the whole issue of the tolls, the debate over the tolls during the campaign, the flip-flopping of the governor in where he was going to deal with tolls, trucks only, cars and trucks, now back to trucks only. I think that's going to be the biggest story of the year, clearly. And it's not over yet. We're going to have to see what happens in the special session.
Oh, yeah. I mean, round two is coming up. And again, Jim, within a couple of weeks, we will officially turn the corner. We will be in an election year. And that's when, you know, the calculus notches up even another step to where, as you and I both know, it's going to be weighed the necessity to maybe do something to generate revenue versus the necessity or the top instinct in many elected officials, which, of course, is to, ta-da, get reelected again.
And that's why a couple of weeks ago in my column, when the Senate Democrats were cowering in fear over the threats against them by the no-toll CT people, I called them gutless weasels. I think they have since developed some sort of a spine, and it looks like they may pass tolls in the Senate. We will see a lively debate in the House as well, too. But, you know, I think it's important that your listeners, whether they're for tolls or against them, make sure that their elected officials hear what their opinions are, because they need to know, those elected officials need to know what their constituents want. I mean, they're supposed to be representing them. And the loudest voice in the room right now, and not necessarily, I think, a majority voice, but the loudest voice is clearly those that say no tolls.
You wrote a column, the column that you published on Sunday the 15th, a week ago this past Sunday. I read it. It was a very interesting piece about the car of the future, the supposed, I guess you could say, the Tesla of several decades ago. And it had very much to do, its origins did, in Bridgeport.
I was blown away when I saw this. You know, I try to write about all kinds of different modes of transportation, trains, planes, automobiles, and I discovered that Bridgeport had a hometown connection with Buckminster Fuller. Now, the name may ring a bell to your listeners, and when they hear Buckminster Fuller, they think geodesic dome. He's the architect that came up with that idea.
Yeah.
But he also designed a car. It was called the Dymaxion car, a three-wheeled car that could park in a parking space like a whiz. It could go 90 miles an hour. It would get 30 miles to the gallon. And it was designed and built on Atlantic Street in the Tongue Point neighborhood of downtown Bridgeport. There were only three of them that were ever built, and they had some design problems as well, too. But this is a little-known piece of Bridgeport history, that this car of the future in the 1930s and early 40s was a product of Bridgeport and its engineering expertise.
Fascinating. And, folks, you want to check it out. Once again, the title of that column, Bridgeport Was Home to the Car of the Future. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more from Jim Cameron as we wrap up the year in transportation. We'll talk to Jim when we come back about, well, you know, there's not only a controversy about the roads and the rails here in Connecticut and tolls, but what to do with the regional airports. That sucker has popped up again. Jim, hang on. Traffic and weather together on the sixes here. 3:46. What should we make bigger and more modern? Sikorsky in Stratford, Tweed in New Haven, maybe both, maybe neither. We'll talk about that coming up right here, 3:46 on Connecticut Today. And we're at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Few more minutes with our commuter advocate, Jim Cameron. Of course, we've checked in with him regularly over the first several months of this year program, trying to make some sense about what's going on or not going on transportation-wise around the state. Jim, a couple of things I wanted to touch with you on before we get to the, again, another constant discussion we've had about the airports, which I think we've been having since Gustav Whitehead first took off on a beach in Fairfield County 150 years ago. even Gustav was wondering, what should we do with our regional airports? That didn't exist. You also wrote a piece about something that just makes me shake my head, Jim, every time I read about it. For about the past 70 years, we've been telling trucks, stay off the Merritt Parkway. Stay off the Wilbur Cross Parkway. Simple physics says if your truck is above a certain height, it's going to hit a bridge. Yet, Mr. Cameron, this happens over and over and over again. And my immediate thought whenever I hear one of these is, how long before one of those bridges is completely taken out?
Well, this was a topic at the back of my mind for years as well, too. And I finally, full disclosure, as I am a member of the Merritt Parkway Conservancy, the preservation of those bridges is a crucial concern to the Conservancy. Those are beautiful bridges, and the DOT deserves points for keeping them in good shape. But as you point out, I mean, those trucks that come up on that that parkway, do you know, believe it or not, the King Street Bridge in Greenwich has been hit 150 times in the last decade.
Jeez.
24 times last year alone. That bridge is, it usually wins the battle between bridge and truck. And the truck that hits it, you know, gets decapitated. Its load is spread over the highway. Traffic is delayed, et cetera. But, you know, those bridges can't take, you know, the abuse of being struck by overheight trucks. So the question is, why are those trucks on the parkway? Why isn't more being done to keep them off of the parkway? Well, I talked to the state police, and apparently they only have two troopers working the entire length of the Merritt Parkway. And they're busy 24/7 dealing with disabled vehicles and car crashes, et cetera. If they see a truck, obviously, they, you know, they alert the authorities, and they do what they can to stop it. The trucks get onto the parkways, though, because unfortunately most of them are driven by novice drivers.
Yep.
There's, you know, that there's 100% turnover every year in the trucking industry.
100%. I did not know that.
It's huge. Yeah, that's a whole other column which is coming up about how underpaid and overworked truck drivers are. But the novices that are the ones that get stuck on the parkway are relying on their GPS system or even a system like Waze that says the shortest distance between two points is a semi-straight line. And they don't know it when they get on that parkway because the signage until recently has been so confusing as you enter the parkway. There's a little sign that says prohibited commercial vehicle trailers, combination over 7,500 pounds, vehicles over 8 feet, blah, blah, blah. And you don't notice that when you're getting onto the parkway.
No.
So now they're coming up with new signage, big, bold signage that says trucks prohibited. The worst time of year, apparently, is in the September region when kids are coming back from school and they're driving U-Hauls from out of state and they're going to Yale, Middlebury, wherever it is they're going. And they don't know any better. They don't realize they're driving an overheight vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something I've always wondered about, Jim, is, you know, there's got to be a way to at least increase the warnings, the on-ramps there, or even, you know, maybe contact these people like Waze, like Google Maps to, you know, can they put some sort of indicator? Look, we went to the moon in 1969. Can you get your database to flash something, right, that says, you know, that says no trucks, please? And then again, what is a truck? I've always, you know, what is considered, you know, a truck here? Do they mean, I'm sure there's confusion, do they mean a little U-Haul? Do they mean a box truck? So it is definitely confusing. Finally, Jim, we as I said, the issue first raised by the Wright brothers and Gustav Whitehead when they flew tandem and it had to land on a beach in Stratford. What do we do primarily about the two big regional airports here, Tweed and New Haven, which is having this, you know, annual battle again about its runway again? And some people in the area saying, hey, wait a minute, screw that. Let's make the improvements here to Sikorsky.
Well, both of those airports are part of the governor's CT 2030 transportation vision. One or both of them will probably be expanded against the objection of neighbors. And believe it or not, Senator Fasano, who is the let me back off here because I'm not sure.
Okay.
One of the senior leaders in the legislature, it might be Senator Fasano, it might be his Democratic counterpart, owns land and is on the board of directors of a local swim club that would be affected by any of those runway extensions. So I see an inherent conflict of interest as lawmakers are looking at the regulations of those two airports. But a larger issue also is, you know, those airports on the coastline are going to be subjected to rising sea levels. And the critics and others might say, is it wise to invest a lot of money in an airport that's going to be underwater in 20, 30 years? Would it be wiser, perhaps, to do something inland or to increase rail service to Bradley Airport so you can be able to take a train from Gold Coast, from Bridgeport, from Greenwich, from New Haven, and have a one-seat ride that'll take you straight up to Bradley? Clearly, the answer is not asking people to crawl down to over the Throg's Neck or the Whitestone Bridge and catch a flight out of LaGuardia, especially when we have two local airports.
Come on, Jim, that's so much fun to do that when you've got a car full of kids and suitcases. What else could be better than going to a New York airport?
Oh, and you get to pay tolls, too. What a concept, right? And be sure to ask for your Connecticut discount when you go across those bridges.
Yes. Which finger will Andrew Cuomo stick up at you when you do that?
It'll be one. It'll be one of them, and it doesn't mean you're number one, Paul. Yeah.
You nutmeggers, you're number one. Go Huskies.
Right.
Jim, thank
That's
you.
Right.
It's been fun over the past year. We'll hook up with you next month as we start 2020. Thanks, Jim.
Happy holidays.
You too. Jim Cameron. Appreciate it. Jim Cameron there. Read all his columns. Hearst Connecticut Media, the column he writes, Getting There, the commuter advocate covering all things tolls and roads and rail and bridges and air travel as well. Traffic and weather is State Senator Kevin Kelly. You love my intros, do you?
Oh, I do, Paul.
State Senator Kevin Kelly. Of Stratford. Kevin, how are you? How's the holiday spirit? Is it a wash over you?
Of course. This is the most wonderful time
of the year. Yes.
and Paul, I'm going to start off by, wishing you and all your listeners a very happy holiday season full of peace and joy.
Kevin, thank you. We appreciate it. Same to you and your family and all the legislators up there. First of all, the bill to turn Sikorsky Airport in Stratford into an international flight hub. Have you introduced that one yet?
No, I have not introduced that one yet. I'm keeping my eyes peeled in case one does surface.
So I shouldn't plan on flying a nonstop Sikorsky to London this year, is what you're telling me.
Hopefully not anytime soon.
Okay. But Kevin, we are turning the corner, and then we have the short session coming up, which is in an election year. It's about a 3-month session. Give us a little preview as we stand here now on this December 23rd. In a few weeks, you folks will be back up there. What can we expect? What are some of the things, Kevin, that your constituents and the taxpayers all around the state might be interested in?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, an issue that I've been working very hard on since last session ended, and in a bipartisan manner, is to try to get our arms around the ever-increasing costs of health care in Connecticut. Last year, at the end of session, we looked at reinsurance, which was a bill that I had proposed and which the Connecticut Exchange endorsed, coupled with looking at what's known as benchmarking out of Massachusetts, where they have been able to reduce what was year over year anywhere from I'm going to say 6, 7, 8, sometimes 10% increase year over year for healthcare costs down to about 3%. And so we want to look at those, and we've been moving these issues forward. So I think we're going to see something in that area. And that's something that I think Connecticut families, when I walked 2 years ago, and I'm surprised it's taken this long, people, it didn't matter what the age group was, what your political affiliation was. They all complained that Connecticut's health care costs are just too much. It's breaking the family budget, just like the tax structure in the state of Connecticut. And those are two issues that, I'd like to work on. One is to reduce health care costs, and two, where possible, bring fiscal restraint and to lower the tax burden, because the middle class family is just really – financially, it ends with wit's end.
Kevin, you talked about an issue, and this may have been woven into something you just mentioned, but you talked about there was a medical payment issue months ago that may have endangered at least one nursing home in Fairfield and another one, I believe, in the Valley area as well. Where does that stand?
Well, that was a concern I voiced last week in a special session. Paul, when we dealt with the hospital lawsuit. And this was a good initiative that I voted for because it's going to keep good paying middle class healthcare jobs, people employed at hospitals. It's going to keep hospitals open, which means that our healthcare systems are going to be here. And it also got the taxpayer out from under a $4 billion problem that the Malloy administration had created. But now as we look at the reimbursement rates for Medicaid, mm-hmm. One of the things they're going to be doing is looking at increasing the Medicaid reimbursement rate for hospitals. And my initial concern, although we've been promised, and I know on your show we've talked a lot about this, is that there's really no trust in government
yeah.
for good reason. But the Democrats are promising that they're not going to, you know, take the 2%, give it to a hospital, and then go back on the, you know, I'm going to say the long-term care facilities, the nursing homes, and take it away from them. What is particularly troubling at this point is that there's been a retreat over the past 8 years from home care. And while the governor in the current budget has started to penalize nursing homes that aren't performing, he's also at the same time closing and reducing funds for home care. So on one hand, they're looking at closing nursing homes because they think we don't need the beds. But if you don't have these beds available, then people need to age in place in
yeah.
the community. You can't at the same time cut home care because that's what people want. I can go into a room, ask people who wants to go to a nursing home. Not many people raised their hands.
And Kevin, we should point out that you're an elder care attorney by trade, so you deal with this stuff every day.
Every day. Every day, Paul. And, you know, people want to age in place. They want to stay home. It's better. You get a better health outcome. It's less expensive, and it's what everybody wants. I just don't understand why we can't get anything through the legislature that would enable people to do this.
And Kevin,
it's in our best interest.
One thing I want to touch on here in the 2 minutes or so we have left, again, there's this log jam, this loggerhead as far as voting on tolls or not. And because of that, the Valley, the bonding was not voted on, not passed last week anyway, for the Valley Fire Training Academy. And we've had that land ready for years. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there's still this holdup of about $60 million to local cities and towns for road maintenance. Hello, fill those potholes and also get the snow off the streets.
Yeah, this is, you know, one of those perplexing opportunities where you can actually demonstrate. Here we have, you know, two plans, and I think the Republicans are showing a better way. We can make all the infrastructure improvements. We can make the trains run on time and quicker to their destination, and we can do it without tolls or taxes. The Democrats, on the other hand, are insisting on taxes and tolls. But what is also, as you said, you know, problematic here is they're holding up the local bonding. And in many cases, it's for road construction, fixing the potholes. That's transportation. That's transportation. And they're holding back that money until after there's a vote on tolls, which, you know, raises an eyebrow as to why would you be doing that unless there was some connection between the two. And I'm, you know, just the very fact that we haven't had a vote, despite the fact that the governor says he has the votes, is also raising eyebrows.
Kevin, thank you for all you've done this year. We'll turn the corner, and we will talk to you in a few weeks just as the session gets underway. I'm excited. I don't know about you, but I'm excited, you know, what you guys will be going through over the next few months. Take some first-person video. We'll put it on our website, I promise, okay?
Okay, Paul.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a great holiday. We'll talk to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You do likewise. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yep, that's what we need, a legislator to carry the WICC Connecticut Today camera, some in-person video up there to show what they really go through.